Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Michael Carome, who is the Deputy Director of Public Citizens Health Research Group and an internationally recognized expert on the protection of human research subjects. He is also the Associate Director for Regulatory Affairs at the Office of Human Research Protections within the Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Michael Carome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And this outbreak of fungal meningitis from steroid injections that have been prepared by a compounding pharmacy in New England, the compounding center in Framingham, Massachusetts, or the New England compounding center in Framingham, Massachusetts, has taken its death toll has risen to 12 now. There are at least 119 infections in 10 states, and as many as 13,000 people have been exposed. Let's begin with something that's come to the table now as a result of this public health catastrophe, and that is that there's apparently there's a group of people called compounding pharmacies, and there are also, of course, drug manufacturers. And it turns out that compounding pharmacies are not regulated, even though they appear to be engaged in drug manufacturing, whereas drug manufacturers are. So walk us through the differences between these two, compounding pharmacies and drug manufacturers.
Sure. Compounding pharmacies have really been around for years. In fact, they date back a couple of centuries and were the typical pathway for someone to get a drug to treat a condition. But as we entered the 20th century, laws were passed by Congress that tightened the regulation of drugs and the role or the niche that compound pharmacies fill is supposed to be quite narrow now. And if you have an individual patient who has an unmet need for a medical problem and that can't be solved by a marketed drug, a compound pharmacy can produce something that can treat that individual patient under the prescription of a doctor. And for instance, if there's a patient who needs heart medicine and there is such heart medicine on the market, but they're allergic to one of the components, a compounding pharmacy can make that in a way that doesn't have that component that causes allergies. And these are, again, supposed to be tailored to individual patients. And what's happened, and then we have large drug companies that manufacture millions of doses of various drugs. Those drug companies are subject to FDA regulations. That is, they need approval from the FDA in order to market a drug, and they have to prove that their drug is safe and effective. And then once they have that approval to market a drug, they have to comply with what are called good manufacturing practices. They have to make the drug in a safe way without contaminants, particularly bacterial or fungal contaminants, when you're talking about drugs that are supposed to be sterile and are to be injected in people. Now, compounding pharmacies are not subject to those same FDA regulatory requirements. And so there's this double standard. And the recent outbreak of fungal meningitis highlights the failure of the FDA's regulatory oversight of drugs prepared by these compounding pharmacies. The problem is that some of these pharmacies have evolved from that narrow role of being a compound pharmacy to produce individual drugs for individual patients to producing drugs on a very large scale. So large-scale production of standardized versions of a drug, in the case of this meningitis outbreak, a drug that's supposed to be sterile and injected in the patients. And so they've crossed the line from the narrow role that compounding pharmacies are allowed to fill into one of drug manufacturing. But unfortunately, they haven't been following the guidelines, the regulations, the requirements that would apply to a drug manufacturer. And so we have this public health catastrophe.
And apparently the company, the New England Compounding Center in Framingham, Massachusetts, is owned by a Gregory Conigliaro, who invented a way to turn plastic into pothole filler. And he, along with his brother-in-law, Barry Cadden, who's a pharmacist, he's in charge of the New England Compounding Center, apparently the brother-in-law. But they also are owners of another company called Ameridose LLC, a private company that mixes drugs for hospitals nationwide. So both of these entities owned by these brother-in-laws are not subject to any regulation. Were they able to cross the line?
Well, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that these companies, these compounding pharmacies, started engaging in large-scale drug production and distribution across state lines, so interstate commerce. And they actually are subject to current laws that the FDA enforces, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And indeed, in 2006, the New England Compounding Center and four other compounding pharmacies simultaneously were issued warning letters by the FDA because they were engaged in practices just like we're seeing with this injectable steroid that has led to the life-threatening fungal meningitis outbreak. And the FDA said, in that case, the drugs were topical pain relievers, numbing medicines, and the FDA said, you're manufacturing drugs, you're doing it in a way that's sort of mass producing, and you're distributing them across in interstate commerce, and that's illegal. You must stop doing that, and if you don't stop, we're going to seize these illegal products. And so the FDA was telling these companies that they had authority to regulate what they were doing, and they weren't complying. And what's happened is, since that time, the FDA apparently has dropped the ball. They have failed to follow up. You know, there was this great red flag back in 2006, and the company did the exact same thing that they were told was illegal in 2006, and so we have this public health disaster. And so there's the FDA is culpable, you know, for the failings that have occurred here.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Michael Carome, who's the Deputy Director of Public Citizens Health Research Group and an internationally recognized expert on the protection of human research subjects. Well, you can add to that the FDA's warning to the New England Compounding Center prior to the 2006 warning. In 2004, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Massachusetts Board of Pharmacy inspected the New England Compounding Center and issued a warning letter taking them to task for opening sterile products and repackaging them in a way that was dangerous. And they were particularly concerned about the New England Compounding Center's splitting of a cancer drug, Avastin, into multiple doses used to treat an eye condition. So again, what's going on here? This is not just repackaging, it's repurposing.
Sure, exactly. And you are correct. So the inspection that you reference is the inspection that actually led to the warning letter that wasn't issued until almost 2 years after the inspection was completed, which in and of itself is surprising. It took so long to get the warning letter out. And indeed, that warning letter also cited a total of four drugs, including the repackaging of this drug Avastin that was approved for certain cancers. And the way the drug was legally prepared by the drug company that made it in the first place was in vials without any type of preservative. And because of that, you're not supposed to take it and break it up into multiple doses for subsequent use, which is what the New England Compounding Center did. And that was a violation of the label for the drug and represented, again, essentially a further drug manufacturing activity by the New England Compounding Center. And that the FDA said, that's illegal. We have authority over you. You can't do that, and you must stop. And if you don't stop, we're going to seize those illegal products. And it really is, this was a forewarning to what could happen. It's occurred essentially in the situation with the steroid injectables that they've been selling in the tens of thousands of doses across the country.
And the point being that this compounding center doesn't have the same rigorous manufacturing conditions to produce sterile drugs. The fact that they can open and break sterile labels and then repackage stuff in a non-sterile environment is just mind-boggling.
Yes, because they're functioning behind the guise of a compounding pharmacy rather than a drug manufacturer, they are not bound. They don't follow what are called good manufacturing practices that a standard drug company manufacturer would follow. And among the requirements that good manufacturing requires is producing it in a way that they are sterile, and then actually testing every lot to make sure there are no germs, no bacteria, no fungus, no viruses in the medicines. And if you find even one of those in one small sample of a particular lot, that whole lot has to be disposed of before, and so it never gets to patients. Those type of practices just aren't being done by the compounding pharmacy in this case. They should be done, again, because they are functioning in this case as a basically a large-scale manufacturer drug. So they should have been doing that, but they didn't. And the FDA really looked the other way and allowed this to happen.
So we don't know how many of these 13,000 people have been exposed. What's your sense of, with 12 deaths so far and at least 119 infections in 10 states, the Center for Disease Control seems to be taking the lead in this. I guess they're tracking the steroid, this injectable steroid that's been distributed. What's your sense of how much worse this can get?
Well, clearly, so far, the numbers have steadily increased day by day. The CDC is posting the daily counts of number of infections detected and the number of deaths and the number of states in which these are occurring. It actually was up to 137 today and 12 deaths. And there's been no sign that that number has peaked yet. And the CDC, I believe, said yesterday that it may take up to 6 weeks, if not more, between an injection and being certain that a patient isn't going to get sick. So this is going to play out over the next several weeks. I don't think there's an expectation that 13,000 people are going to come down with this infection, but it certainly may reach into the several hundreds at the rate it's going, and there may be a significant number of additional deaths, unfortunately. And the great tragedy here for the families of those who have been sickened or killed by this tainted drug is that this situation was really completely avoidable. Had the FDA stayed on top of this, following their prior warning letter, had they closely monitored this company, reinspected it, these activities would have been easily detected and could have been stopped sooner.
But isn't the FDA a victim of this anti-government mania, particularly on the part of the Republicans who are obsessed with deficits and arguing the need for austerity? And it seems whenever they make cuts to government agencies, to big government, as it's called, they usually go after the regulatory staff. They've done that to the SEC. I'm assuming here they've also done the same as at the FDA. Am I correct in that, my suspicion?
I think, you know, over the last several years, the total amount of staffing at the FDA has actually increased because of the increasing use of user fees that must be paid by drug companies and to an increasing extent by medical device companies. And the fees, though, primarily go to funding the reviews of new drugs and new devices as opposed to monitoring after approval and monitoring the production and manufacturing. I mean, to some extent, some of that may be paid for, but the vast majority of those fees goes towards review activities so that the companies can be kept happy, so that they get fast reviews of their products so they can bring them to market. The part of the budget that's provided by tax dollars and appropriated by Congress has become a smaller and smaller percentage of the overall budget. And so those activities unrelated to review of drugs and devices probably are decreasing, and so they are stretched thin in terms of perhaps inspecting factories and manufacturers, and in this case, compounding pharmacies.
So just to get this straight, Dr. Michael Karam, the FDA takes private money from drug manufacturers to have their products tested and fast-tracked into the retail market, and that takes up most of the manpower, and the kind of work that's lacking in the case that we're talking about that's led to this outbreak of fungal meningitis, that's a totally separate entity, and presumably that's understaffed. It certainly doesn't seem to have the priority that the other group do.
Right. We're talking about enforcement and compliance staffing as opposed to the staff that reviews applications for approval of new drugs and new devices.
So what do you think is likely to happen now? I mean, first of all, if you're a family of the victims, you've got to be incredibly angry and we are live in a very litigious society, who do they sue? I mean, it's obviously going to be lawsuits of flying thick and fast, right?
I think that's likely to be the case as people seek to hold various parties responsible and accountable. First of all, you have the company that made the contaminated products. It's likely that they may go out of business and become bankrupt, and also likely to be held responsible and possibly sued are physicians and clinics and hospitals that bought these drugs from compounding pharmacies and used them, perhaps knowing that they were coming from a compounding pharmacy and perhaps not in some cases, and not realizing that these compounding pharmacy drugs did not meet FDA standards. The drugs were not approved by the FDA and had not been manufactured according to the highly stringent requirements for a typical drug company, a drug manufacturer. And so I think some responsibility obviously is going to lie with the clinicians, the hospitals, and the clinics.
Well, just in closing, Dr. Michael Karam, is anybody talking about plugging this loophole?
I think we have called on Congress to investigate this tragic situation and hopefully hold aggressive oversight hearings, bringing FDA officials to the table to answer questions. And if the current statutes and regulations are found to provide the FDA with the authority to have prevented this disaster, then senior FDA officials should be held accountable. If indeed Congress finds that there are holes in the agency's existing legal authority, then Congress should act to immediately pass legislation to remedy the situation so this doesn't happen again.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Dr. Michael Karam.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Michael Karam, who's the Deputy Director of Public Citizens Health Research Group and an internationally recognized expert on the protection of human research subjects. He was also the Associate Director for Regulatory Affairs at the Office of Human Research Protections within the Department of Health and Human Services. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back with the film critic for The New Yorker, David Denby, talking about his new book, Do the Movies Have a Future?
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you